This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Darren Revelle will join us at the bottom of the hour. Justin Fields' pro day was yesterday, Seth. The Ohio State quarterback who's thought to be a at the very least thought to be one of the five best quarterbacks in this draft. And it seems like these five quarterbacks are all going to be popular enough to where I'm seeing noise about New England is going to have to get into the top 10 if they want to get Justin Fields. Apparently the people believe that Bill Belichick might like Justin Fields as his quarterback.
And is that the latest? Like New England might trade up?
Yeah. Kuiper's been pounding that the last 2 days on the TV in here.
The problem is, I try to stay away from like Kuiper and those guys, like the big media. I like Daniel Jeremiah because I think for the most part he's going to give you – he gives you his measured actual opinion and everything. And you just – you never know with some of the big, big, big guys how much they're doing just to try to create buzz or what have you. But we're getting down to the nitty-gritty where a lot of the rumors and everything start to – congeal. Like everything, there's some things that you can almost look at like, oh, you know what, I actually believe that, I don't believe that. And then some of it always just ends up being complete BS. But yeah, these major rumors this last week are kind of a big deal.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of skepticism over just how in love with Mac Jones of Alabama the 49ers are. I mean, There's been plenty of rumor about he's going to be the guy that they're taking at three. That's why they moved up, was to get Mac Jones, and yet the assessments I see of Mac Jones just purely in terms of traits and profile and resume and everything else, I mean, John Harris has him 40th, I think, on his Harris 100, whereas he's got all these other quarterbacks, Fields and Lance and Wilson and Lawrence up near the tippy top of this whole thing. But when Justin Fields was having his pro day yesterday, I know you and I finished the show by talking about that, and I was saying, you know what, when we come in tomorrow, what are they going to be saying? What will the smoke be about Justin Fields? And sure enough, Seth, looking at a headline right here on CBSSports.com. NFL Draft 2021. Justin Fields, Kyle Shanahan talk at Pro Day.
They talked.
Stirring up buzz over who will go number three to the 49ers.
Well, okay. The thing about Justin Fields is this. Like, there's so much of Justin Fields in where it feels sometimes like they're – like, you're trying so hard to find negatives that you turn a positive into a negative. Like, where sometimes, because he's just so freakishly gifted and talented, and he's been so good, that I think sometimes, okay, he holds on to the ball too long sometimes, sure. That turns into he's got slow processing speed. The problem is, and this is where it bothers me, is that part of him holding on to the ball too long is that you can also tie it to him being very careful with the football. He's been extremely careful with the football. Like, the Pro Football Focus has turnover-worthy plays. So that's like whether it's an interception or not. And it's pretty good. Like, it's a pretty good stat in theory. There's still some judgment involved. But it's like, hey, throwing something that could have been an interception is just as bad as throwing an interception when it comes to evaluating your turnover-worthy. Like, he's had 18 turnover-worthy plays in his entire career.
Wow.
This includes fumbles and everything. So part of it is, okay, he holds on to the ball too long, but part of it isn't, like, bear with me, everybody. He hardly ever takes risks with the football. So sometimes perhaps it is a slow processing speed, but sometimes perhaps it's also being exceedingly careful with the football. But you marry that So he's got so few turnover-worthy plays, and yet at the same time, he is incredibly aggressive downfield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's aggressive downfield, but he's careful with it. He holds onto the ball too long sometimes. In a lot of ways, that sounds a whole lot like a young Deshaun Watson, except that he's more careful about turnovers.
Yes.
Whereas Deshaun Watson wasn't nearly as careful about the turnovers. So I feel like, and this is another situation too, where sometimes in the past it used to be it hurt you if you didn't have enough college tape. This year and in recent years, it almost feels like guys are getting the benefit of the doubt for not having enough college tape. Like if Trey Lance gets taken above Justin Fields, it's going to be partly because he hasn't had as many opportunities to have bad games. He hasn't had enough opportunities to show the hiccups. You know, because you can go back through the years and think about all the different quarterbacks. What's his name? The blonde kid at USC. I'm blanking on his name. That ended up staying his senior
year. Oh, Matt
year.
Barkley.
Barkley, right.
Yeah.
Barkley was supposed to be a, you know, consensus top 10 pick, and that all changes or whatever. But his senior season, he showed some of the kinks in the armor. He showed some of the negatives. And sometimes the guys that have one or two breakout years and then go pro, they don't have the opportunity to show what their weaknesses are. So I think people are higher on Justin Fields than a lot of the naysayers would have you believe.
Yeah, boy, you're right. I think it was 2 years ago in the regular season, Seth, I want to say he threw one interception in the regular season, which when he ended up throwing an interception or two in the playoff game for Ohio State that year, everybody's like, holy crap, we haven't seen that all year. He had like 37 touchdowns and one interception, a ridiculous ratio. Yeah, that's a great stat.
But then the other thing that happens this time of year is the nice long fluff pieces come out on people. And Trey Lance, I was reading one yesterday, I think it was in SI, and like by the end of the article, I'm like, well, this guy is like Gandhi and Joe Montana all rolled up into one. And I feel like, honestly, you're the dumbest person on earth if you don't draft him as high as possible.
Fluff piece appropriately fluffed you.
It fluffed me up. Yes. Sean, just one thing they say about Seth is he loves his fluffers. And I'm not going to lie, I do. I do. It gets me ready to go.
That's right.
It gets me ready for the big event.
That's right. Which is a draft 2 weeks from now.
Yes, the NFL draft.
I was thinking about this as I was reading an article that was not nearly as fluffy as the one about Trey Lance that you read. But Trey Lance's name did get mentioned in it because it was about the Falcons now sit at 4. And that's the spot that everybody's dialed in on now, because I think everybody knows Lawrence 1, probably Wilson 2, and some quarterback 3, whether it's Fields or Trey Lance or Mac Jones, is going to go at 3. So we're going to have 3 quarterbacks. So now Atlanta, either themselves taking a quarterback to replace Matt Ryan eventually or trading that pick, the belief is there's a really good chance a quarterback could go at 4. And I'm thinking to myself, you know who the big winner is in all this? The freaking Cincinnati Bengals. If the Falcons take a quarterback, or whoever picks 4th takes a quarterback at 4, it's basically like the Bengals got the number 1 overall pick in the draft 2 years in a row, because they don't need a quarterback. They drafted Joe Burrow last year. So if it goes Lawrence, Wilson, then QB3 and QB4, the Bengals sit at 5, and they essentially are going to do the same thing they would have done with the first overall pick. Now, maybe they could have traded down from the first overall pick, picked up other picks, but purely in terms of their big board, they don't. My guess is they don't have any quarterbacks sitting at the top of their big board because they've got Joe Burrow. They're going to get their pick of the litter of whatever player they would have taken with the first overall pick.
Yeah, and then it's just a matter of, okay, do you go with Kyle Pitts, the most ridiculously talented tight end anybody's ever seen?
Right.
Which comes with some hazard, right? Like it's tight ends seem to be. It's kind of like with edge pass rushers. Sometimes the more freakish they are, the more you start to worry. Like, okay, what's the downside of this guy? Because like, where the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away as well. And sometimes if you give a young quarterback, especially a really good tight end,
mm-hmm.
that's that's a hell of a recipe. But at the same time, you'd also like to think, okay, if I've got a young quarterback, I'd like to protect him, and I'd like to maybe take a Penei Sewell or somebody that's just ridiculously talented there. I would take the tight end. I feel like a tight end, especially like Pitts, gives you these days just as much pass protection by just being able to get rid of the ball quickly, by helping out your wide receivers, giving you more ability to be versatile in your personnel selection, and he's going to be there for 10 years for Joe Burrow if it works out.
Yeah, and he can be conventional too. He's a pretty good blocker as well, so he can be a conventional tight end if you're using him that way. And Jamar Chase, I think, is a guy whose name gets brought up because he's a college teammate of Joe Burrow's. They made a lot of magic together back in the day. All right, 713-572-4610. Let's go to the phones. Mac is in Rocheron. Mac, welcome into Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, man, how y'all guys doing today?
Not bad, you?
I'm good. I want to ask a quick question, and I hope I don't take up too much time. Can you tell me what your top four wide receivers are in the draft?
Top four wide receivers. I'm a big fan. Is that all you have, Mac?
No, that's not all I have. I want to name one after that to have y'all take a look at after okay. y'all name the top four.
I would say, just my opinion, I like Chase the best. I like Chase and Waddle ahead of Devontae Smith just because I'm not wild about Devontae Smith's slight frame. So those are my top three. And then probably the Tony kid out of Florida after that, Kadarius Tony, I would say.
Rondale Moore from Purdue. Okay. I mean, there's there's the consensus top three.
Right.
That's what I was going to ask. Cause to me, Rondale Moore, playing where he played and playing in the Big Ten, to me, he's better than Waddle and Smith. If he'd have been at Alabama or Ohio State, and Waddle, to me, he's just so much better than Waddle. If you just look at his videos, I mean, he's awesome. I don't understand, you know, I guess he's just not getting the respect because of where he played at. But this kid here is just different. He's a Tariq for the – I mean, he is that right now. I'm just asking what y'all think.
Yeah, he's really – appreciate the phone call, Matt. He's really good. Now, he's small. That's why he's behind these guys. He's not your typical dimensions. He's 5'9", probably like a 175. But he was super, super productive at Purdue, no question about it.
That's where the – and I think maybe as a smaller guy too – he's also – he hasn't shown a whole lot of versatility even in college. He's been like an underneath route type of guy. Like he's been a short area guy. So I think that he might end up being one of those guys that justifiably isn't regarded as high as those other guys. But if he ends up in the right system and they can use him and he becomes a Julian Edelman type or something like that, then, yeah, it looks like you got the steal of the draft. It's just – He's totally got to be the right spot, the right offense. Right now you can say that about the top any small wide receiver is like that because it's hard to say a small guy is going to be able to beat press coverage, but some guys can just because they're so damn fast. Mm-hmm. But when you the scary thing as a talent evaluator is when a small guy can't beat physical coverage, then you look like the idiot that thought a small guy was going to beat press coverage.
Right.
So that's where they just don't get – like, to be taken high, you got to show extreme outside threat, extreme downfield threat in college. And he just hasn't done that yet. So I think honestly, like, I don't think he should be as high as the top three. And maybe he's hurt somewhat by going to Purdue. But I could see him being better than at least one of those top three. But I also understand why he's not getting drafted as high.
Boy, Johnny Harris loves him. Some of these, he's got Jamar Chase. He's got Trevor Lawrence number one in his Harris 100. Jamar Chase second best player. He's got Devontae Smith the third best player. Kyle Pitts four. Kyle Pitts, of course, a tight end, and then this thing's having a tough time. And then he's got Jalen Waddle, eighth. So those three names we just rattled off, he's got them. You don't get past eight until you get to all three of them in Johnny Harris's rankings, which I respect.
So Devontae Smith is tiny, and the thing I would worry about with him is that he got handled by physical college players at times. You know, like, they're not reps. It's not like he was shut down completely or anything. But there were times where you saw, okay, if college kids are going to manhandle him with physicality, how's he going to handle that in the NFL?
That's my concern, too.
Yeah, and then that comes down to offensive coordinator, using him on the move, off the ball, all that stuff. But you're going to have to potentially be creative with him.
He's got Rondale Moore, for what it's worth, John Harris, in his Harris 100. I would recommend going finding the Harris 100. It's a great breakdown. He's got him 24th. So he's got him, you know, presumably late first, early second round type of talent there, 24th on his Harris 100.
And the frustrating thing is, the important thing is that he's much too good for the Texans to probably have a crack at him.
That is probably, to our, if we're going to localize it, that is probably the most relevant thing to know about Rondale Moore. All right, as we continue on, the Astros, they've lost five in a row. Should the Astros have even been playing baseball last night? That's next. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610 with you on a Thursday. Darren Revelle is going to join us in the next segment.
Ooh, kind of him. Johnny Manziel sent him an autographed football that said, bleep you, Darren Revelle.
I like it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, an autographed Browns helmet.
Okay. I wonder if Revelle has put it on eBay yet to try to... He's usually on the buying end of the memorabilia, not the selling end of the memorabilia. Sean, I don't think that thing's going anywhere.
Sean, you're so simple. No, he's going to take a picture of it and sell the NFT on whatever platform it
is. Basic. All right. Dusty Baker last night, following the Astros' fifth straight loss, said, don't worry, it's going to get better.
Well, I mean, it's hard on the team, but, you know, you have to carry on. And, you know, the show must go on. And it went on today with, you know, some younger players that we have here. You know, like I said, we, you know, we gave them a big lead, you know, and they got a number of two-out hits. And, you know, that's what's eluding us, you know, not only two-out hits, but, you know, stopping them from getting it and also getting some ourselves. So, you know, we'll get it together. You know, it's a long year. We're you know, it's a stumbling block that, you know, we'll get over. And, you know, you got to just keep fighting and fighting. And, you know, the worm will turn sometime.
All right.
And so hopefully so.
We got it, Dusty. Seth, I will say this, that if this were last year and the Astros had just lost five in a row to fall to 6-6 on the season, I would have looked up and said, oh, crap, the season is a fifth of the way over. Like if they had lost.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, last season, this little stretch of baseball they had in would be the equivalent of losing, like, 14 games in a row in a 162-game season.
Wait, what was the actual multiplier? It was 3-point-something. Yeah. Or, no, 2-point-something, because it was – what was the regular season, 60 games?
60 games versus 100. Yeah, it was 2.7.
Yeah, 2.7. Yeah, so we tried to do that for a little while, and it lost its luster. Yeah. Like, we tried to play make believe. Like, hey, this 3-game winning streak should actually, like, 2.7. Like, no,
right?
It's it didn't quite work out.
It didn't. Everybody's like, sorry, we're reading articles about getting vaccinated. Okay, it's COVID right now. It's July during COVID. All right.
There's an election, by the way.
Yeah, there was that too.
Remember that? God, that feels like such a long time ago. Remember that election thing?
I do vaguely. Yeah, vaguely. So, yeah, that's as I'm listening to Dusty talk there and, you know, they lose five in a row. I'm like, okay, he's right. I mean, it's a long season. It's as long a season, we hope, as we expect it to be with 162 games. Now, I think a lot of what he was referring to there from last night is the fact that they had half their everyday lineup torpedoed because of COVID protocols. And we don't know exactly if there was a positive test that caused contact tracing, if one of the players affected was a positive test, but at any rate, Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, Martin Maldonado, those four players in particular are on the injured list because of health and safety protocols. Lance McCullers said after the game last night, and he got shelled pretty good last night, he himself was not feeling well going into that game. He said, we shouldn't have even played this game.
Yeah, well, I'm our player rep as well, so I was dealing with a lot today. You know, I don't really understand why we played tonight, quite honestly. Seems like the rules are different for different teams, depending on who it is, based off of, you know, the COVID issues. You know, a lot of questions and things that we have to get figured out as a team. And, you know, hopefully in the next few days we do.
Do we know, Seth, you mentioned McCullers wasn't feeling well, Brantley wasn't feeling well. We know that this team is still getting vaccinated. You know, they're not vaccinated to the level that their COVID protocols are kind of relaxed a little bit. You know, so they're still at peak level COVID protocols. Do we know that any of these guys that are feeling sick, if it was side effects from being vaccinated, mate, like was Lance?
Oh.
Do we know any of that?
Oh, that's like, a good question. Yeah. No, we don't. I mean, I don't know if, and I don't know if that's anything they would. Boy, that's a really good question,
yeah,
Sean.
Yeah.
Perhaps. It could be. Now, the thing I wondered was whether this COVID protocol was because they were in contact with somebody, because you pointed out that we don't have any news that there was a staffer or anybody else that was that tested positive. So maybe it was that these guys presented physical symptoms and that they were put just under observation and get tested a couple times to be sure that the physical symptoms weren't signs of having COVID. That we just flat out don't know a whole bunch of that. That's a good question. Was Lance and or – because Brantley was sick last night too, apparently. Was it the side effect of the vaccine?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm looking at one guy here. Apologies if this has been – this is Todd Zola. So, I should probably hold off on there's speculation about – there's speculation on Twitter about McCullers and vaccination from people who write about baseball. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, look, baseball writers, as they'll tell you, are the smartest people in the sports world. They're incredibly good at basically looking up stats on the internet and copying and pasting. Other than the ones that, here in Houston that I know and love. I wonder with a pitcher, though. I mean, like, usually, I think, aren't most of the symptoms within the first few days after the vaccine?
Yeah, I would think
it can vary.
I would think that hopefully he wasn't vaccinated, like, the Tuesday before his Wednesday start. You know, like, that would be bad.
Look, I mean, everybody's different with all of this stuff. So I don't know. It's possible. Yeah. And that maybe you should expect that a little bit earlier on. But if it helps loosen it up and makes it less likely for there to be COVID issues down the line, I'd say that's in a 162-game season, Sean, compared to a 60-game season, I'm willing to take that risk.
Yeah.
Because that's where you got to look at this. This is what we've learned as Americans in the last year. We're very self-oriented. We love to think about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's to our strength, sometimes it's to our detriment, but we're resolutely independent. But when you come to group situations, it's about the group immunity and the chances of the group bringing it in. So if everybody in a group is immunized, then it does reduce your chances of any one individual getting a COVID issue. So maybe if we have to pay the price right now with a few queasy-legged guys or shaky-legged guys, I'm willing to, if it means potentially being healthier in the playoffs, then so be it.
Seth, you know how earlier in the show you said that your college coach used to like to tell you that nothing good happened after midnight? This is when we were talking about Aaron Donald allegedly striking that person, and he's being sued for it. It happened between 3 and 4 in the morning. And I said, well, nothing good happens between 3 and 4 in the morning, which you disagreed with, and also said that your college coach would say that nothing good happened after midnight. We have a texter saying, what's the cutoff point for nothing good happening after midnight? Like, when do good things start happening again throughout the...
Yeah.
At what point are you allowed to go out to where you can feel that only good things are happening again? I would say breakfast. When the Egg McMuffin makes its first appearance. 5 a.m.
I'm trying to think of, like, other than maybe Cinderella... Like, where is the justification for saying nothing good happens after midnight for anybody? All the bad stuff, way more bad stuff happens after midnight.
Yeah.
Any first responder will tell you.
Sure.
But to deny that, I mean, hey, a first responder will also tell you that maybe they've saved somebody's life after midnight at some point.
Right.
Was it because they were choking on their own vomit on their 21st birthday? Sure. But for the paramedic, it's a pretty good night that something good happened.
I feel like you think that people that say nothing good happens after midnight are besmirching the good name of a drunken, gratuitous makeout on a dance floor. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
pretty good.
Happy about it.
Right.
Some people meet their wives after midnight.
That's right.
You know, all that stuff is good. It's just it's fraught with peril, too. It's a scary place.
Half the audience now said, yeah. And some people meet their wives after midnight, you know, like as if that's not the greatest thing in the world. You know, like, I will point out that half the country gets divorced. So when you say,
I met my wife after midnight.
Yeah,
it was cool. That was all after
There's
midnight.
There's a lot of people going, yeah, bad stuff happens after midnight. Like that time I met my wife. Of course, they would probably say ex-wife at that point. But, yeah, just, you know, shout out to my divorced people out there. You know what I mean?
I've never understood that saying, nothing good happens after midnight.
It's just football coach propaganda is all it is.
Yeah, I guess so. Especially, and that comes from football coaches who routinely stay up after midnight because they're looking for their eureka moment. Like, I'm convinced that football coaches, they stay up after midnight specifically because they want to be able to tell a story someday of the play that they drew up at 3 a.m.
Right.
When, you know, they're on their 18th pot of coffee. And everybody else had said, no, we need to go home. But I said, no, we'll keep working. And then they came up with it. And that's how you get J.J. Watt running behind Vince Wilfork as his fullback.
The Watt cat was drawn up at 3 a.m.
Well, J.J. Watt has like 18 pulled groin tendons on the play. Like, yeah.
Where his entire muscular structure near his pelvis has turned into a series of shredded rubber bands. Let's throw him in the backfield and give him the rock and see what happens. Behind Vince,
so who was that?
Vince,
yeah, when does stuff? When does the good stuff start happening again? I would say I live a weird life where I'm up at 3 or 4 a.m. a lot of times, and that's when I take my walks or I run. I spend a lot of time like thinking about the alternate universe when I'm like walking past somebody who's on their way home at 3:30 a.m. and I'm like bright eyed and bushy tailed and I've got my mug of coffee with me. That it's just two completely separate worlds.
That's beautiful. All right, Darren Revell, Action Network. We talk about NFTs with him quite a bit. There is a prominent Houston Hall of Famer who's in the NFT game, and I got to ask him about these framed checks that John McClain is talking about yesterday, that he says royalty checks that he frames. What are those things worth? Darren Revell will get his thoughts on all that and the gambling angle of sports next. It's Sean Pendergast, it's Seth Payne, and it's 9:36 on a Thursday, and that can mean only one thing. We are joined right now on the hotline. Action Network. Download the free Action Network app.
It's a good app.
It's a good app, and I've been using it a lot lately because the NCAA tournament got me back to getting that basketball betting bug, and now I'm picking like one or two NBA games a night, which is absolute treachery unless you subscribe to the Action Network and you get some of the great information over there. Joined right now by Darren Revell, the Action Network, joins us every week. What's going on, Darren? How are you?
The NBA is still very hard.
It's treacherous. I've been doing pretty good, but it's the Grim Reaper comes back to roost on a lot of these things when you're doing well. He's always lurking around the corner with NBA basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I get, you know, I have streaks on the totals, especially that I like to play, and then it's like, man, these things will kill you to the last second. It's unreal. It's unreal how close it gets.
Oh, the odds makers are amazing. Did you gamble a lot before you went over to the Action Network, Darren?
Not really. Yeah. No. But I think some of it was that I didn't feel like, you know, I'm an E-list celebrity, right? So like I didn't feel like I wanted to have like a bookie. And I didn't feel comfortable with the offshores, so it really did take it to be legal for me to feel comfortable.
Yeah. So we were talking. We have John McClain on every week, the very famous football writer, and we were talking about royalty checks. He's been in a bunch of movies, and he told us a story about a 99-cent royalty check that he held onto from a movie just because of the movie. And we can't remember what movie it was. Some might have been an Adam Sandler movie. You are an aficionado when it comes to memorabilia in the check realm, and people started sending us a story about Ricky Henderson framing a $1 million check. Do you know, is that a true story about Ricky Henderson framing a $1 million check from either the Yankees or the A's?
It is 100% true. It was 1980, and he got $1 million bonus check, and at the end of the season they came to him and said, hey Ricky, you know, we were doing our budget, and we were $1 million in the positive, we wanted to know, did you ever cash your check? And he goes, no, I framed it.
So did they give him a bag of cash instead?
They explained to him that he could make a copy of it and that he could go to the, you know, bank and actually cash the check, and then he'd actually make the money off it. And he did. And he actually, yeah, I remember because I told that story on Broke. The
the 30 for 30?
Yeah. And then I guess he then confirmed it with he was on with Golic and Greenberg.
So one of the pieces of memorabilia you have is a check that Jackie Robinson paid in rent to his landlord in Brooklyn. And I'm waiting for you to scroll over to how much this rent payment was in your video. $90. He was paying $90 per month in Brooklyn, which seems like a pretty good deal. I don't know. I don't know these days what you can get for $90 per month in Brooklyn. How did you stumble pizza across that little piece of memorabilia?
It's worth $1,000 in today's money.
Still not bad at all. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, probably in that Brooklyn area, you could probably get that. Well, they paid $700,000 for that house in 2017. So maybe you might not be able to get that on the rent there. But my expertise is just, you know, going into auctions, and when these guys make mistakes, you know, like not looking up what this is, and they just say a beautiful Jackie Robinson signature. Obviously, you can spend a whole lot more money if you realize what something is and the significance of it. So, you know, I think a lot of people I was competing with for the check just was saying what the market value of a Jackie Robinson signature was. And I was saying, oh, my God, this could be the most substantive, you know, check that's out there. So it's a rent check from him being in the apartment, being in the house that he broke the color barrier in. And the story of like how he broke the color barrier in that area. It was mostly Jewish area, and Branch Rickey went with him to look for a house, and they found it. And the proprietor of the house, or the owner of the house, asked Jackie Robinson, like, can I see you hit a baseball? Like, can you imagine this happening to like Mike Trout? Like, you're here with the general manager of the Angels, but can you just show us how you hit a ball? And the guy, and allegedly the owner of the house pitched the ball to Jackie Robinson, and he smacked it I can't imagine not even like hitting anything, but he hit it all the way down the block, and the guy said, "I guess we have a winner then."
I thought that I thought maybe he would have like broken a window on the very apartment he was about to rent.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
Yeah, I love Jack. I mean, Jackie Robinson story. People don't know enough about, you know. I mean, in August of 1946, they got together and signed a contract, and Jackie didn't know. He thought that they were just starting a Negro League team in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Brown Dodgers. That's why he thought he got called to Branch Rickey's office, and he was actually shocked that he was going to be a Dodger after going to Montreal. And you know, I don't know. I can't. Every time I see a Jackie item, I want to buy it. I wanted to buy there was a soft Brooklyn Dodgers cap that in the inside of it had metal plates screwed into it, because people would throw things at Jackie, and when he was wearing his soft hat, they didn't want him to get hurt.
So he was basically wearing like a helmet on the underneath.
Yes.
Wow.
Inside. Wow. Yeah.
No
kidding,
man. Well, okay. A little less slightly sentimental and historically significant piece of memorabilia that I saw yesterday on the internet was a helmet that Johnny Manziel sent you. It was a Browns helmet. It was a really cool kind of matte orange Browns helmet. And the inscription is "F you, Darren Revelle." And then he signed his name. How much is that worth? And would it be actually more valuable if you took a picture of it and sold it as an NFT?
It's interesting. I can't go to Johnny Manziel's Twitter account because he's blocked me, but can you right now and read me what he has in his bio, what the motto is he has in his bio? Can you just read that for me?
Yeah, well, in a second.
I'll pull it up.
All it says is his bio. All it says is 2012 Heisman.
Okay, so how about the pinned tweet, maybe?
Okay, let's take a look at that. The pinned tweet of Johnny Manziel. Oh, damn. I'm on tweet deck, so it doesn't do the pinned
tweet. I got it. It says let all that hate out of your heart. Life's way more pure when you show love.
Okay.
Have you ever talked to him? Because for those of you who don't know, Darren Revelle is the one that broke the story about Johnny Manziel receiving payment for those autographs back when he was in college, right? And apparently yes. he's never let go of that. He's still angry at you about that.
So we've had a back and forth. When he had a signing at a Super Bowl, not in the town, but and I went like outside the town, wherever it was, like 30 or 40 minutes during the Super Bowl week, to just say hello and say I didn't mean anything. You know, I was just doing my job, and we actually shook hands and took a photo. But then things rekindled again when I said, you know, his relevancy is tied to him jumping off a roof into a pool. And then he went postal on me again. So things did loosen up for a little bit, but I mean, I got to say, he's got a beautiful signature.
Yeah, he really does. It's a nice piece of memory. Now, is Johnny Manziel because he won a Heisman and because obviously he's got a whole lot of sentimental appeal to Aggies and whatnot, is he a guy that for the rest of his life, and also obviously because of his colorful personality and lifestyle, is he a guy who for the rest of his life is going to be able to make a pretty good living just doing autographs and appearances and stuff like that?
I mean, it certainly in Texas, I know the guys at TriStar are having, I think it's the Houston Collectors show in June, mm-hmm. and Johnny's there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to their site right now. Okay, so they have like Sam Ellinger, Johnny Manziel, Drew Pearson, Bob Lilly, Jeff Bagwell, and Jalen Hurts. I guess they have Hurts there, but, you know, I mean, I think at least in Texas, I think he can sign all day.
Yeah, I think so, too. Darren Revelle joining us from the Action Network joins us each and every week. Hey, Darren, just shifting gears for a second, how much credibility do you give the chance of it succeeding or the chance of it even getting off the ground of the XFL and the CFL working together? I'm sure you've seen the stories about that. They're talking about the potential of doing almost like a Super Bowl with the XFL and the CFL champ. Like, how would... Do you see that ever working? And if so, how do you work that out with the NFL lurking as the monolith in professional football?
I know The Rock's involved, and he's one of those guys that I wouldn't ever bet against. But, man, I have a hard time finding that's going to work. I really do. I don't think the NFL alternatives are going to be, I mean, when we had the NFL alternative in the USFL in the mid 80s, it was kind of like the perfect storm. The NFL wasn't what it is today. They were able to get, rich enough owners to spend a whole lot of money. And, you know, if you looked at the top 10 salaries, the USFL had half of them. It was just a different time. And then they lost the lawsuit, or they won the lawsuit.
Yeah.
But only got a dollar.
Right.
The antitrust lawsuit. And I think that was it. I don't have any hope that there's going to be any competitor to the NFL.
Yeah, I guess that's really the big difference that maybe gets lost in a lot of the discussion, isn't it? I don't think most people would realize that the USFL was competing with the NFL for actual salaries amongst star players.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And that there were rookies that just flat out were going to – the rookies especially, right? The Jim Kellys, the Steve Youngs, the Herschel Walkers, they were going to make way more money in the USFL than they would have in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. It's just not going to happen again, Man, I need to find myself a Doug Flutie. I need a Doug Flutie Miami Boston College ticket, man.
Well,
now you got me thinking about. That's a tough one.
You know what you need is one of these new Yao Ming NFTs, because he's gotten in on the NFTs.
That's an interesting. Hey, listen, at least Let me tell you something. I don't have you had a bottle of Yao Family Wines?
No, is it good?
A bottle of it is shockingly unreal.
Really?
So when I was in Napa Valley, I went to like 10. The last time I was there, I went to like 10 wineries. I've been there 3 times, so it wasn't like I was going to the Cake Breads and the Robert Mondavi's or whatever for the first time. And I'm like, all right, I got to do the Yao thing. I kind of have a responsibility. People might ask me what it's like. And I go in there, and I'm like, what are the prices of the wines? And they're like, well, the cheapest is $75, and then there's $250 and $500. And I'm like, what? Like, what? It has to. And they, you know, I think rosé, you know, 5 or 10 years. I'm not really a crazy wine connoisseur, but 5 or 10 years ago, rosé was like the bastard stepchild, and now is like the most popular thing. And red blends. We're also, hey, you're taking 3 or 4 different types of grapes, and, you know, blends were also bastardized, you know, like it was looked down on. And so although Yao's winery is in Napa Valley, they don't have a specific vineyard, so they source grapes from all over the place, and they have these red blends that are truly outstanding. Like, I would consider buying one of these NFTs. Now it's up to, like, $1,300 or $1,400 you're paying for one of these 2016 reserve bottles, but it is maybe the most serious athlete alcohol, you know, partnership that I've seen in terms of coming through with something other than brand.
Wow, that's saying something, because there's a lot of those out there. When athletes are doing the wine thing, Darren, are most of them just putting their name on it, or are a lot of these guys, is it a serious interest or hobby that they've got?
I mean, Greg Norman did his own. Luke Donald, the golfer, did a partnership, but was kind of more serious and picked out his own. By the way, did you hear about Greg Norman yesterday?
No.
Sold his home for $55 million.
Oh my God! Wow.
10 bedrooms, 12 bathrooms, 2 wine cellars. It says a 150-foot yacht could dock at the property. I hope it comes with the yacht.
I was going to say, does it come with the yacht? Is it a package deal? Wow, $55 million.
Yeah, he bought it for $5 million in '91.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I bet he's had a couple of renovations along the way.
Yeah. Definitely put some money into it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Yao Ming, successful winery operator. He's by far the most popular and successful communist ever to come out of Houston. if there's one thing we love about our favorite communist, Yao Ming, it's that he's so good at so many capitalist ventures as
Indeed.
Well.
Indeed, like wine.
Playing basketball.
Like
yeah.
wine, absolutely. Darren Rebecca.
Usually communism and capitalism don't mix.
Ah, you haven't met China, my friend.
Well, I've met China. If you are a Chinese government official, then it's okay. But if you're
he basically is.
Darren Revelle.
No, but honestly, really quickly, yeah. Like there is a lot of politics here. Like
right.
with everything that Yao does, anything that's commercial supposedly does have to in some way go back to the government.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that I remember covering this in 2002, you know, although, you know, what percentage goes back to the government and all this. And, you know, obviously he's still very involved over there. So
Darren Revelle, Action Network, download that free Action Network app right now so you can be ready to bet on baseball, basketball, golf, whatever else. Darren, we always appreciate the time. Thank you.
You got it.
All right, thanks. Darren Revelle, good stuff. Now I got to try some of that Yao wine, Seth. You had to go mentioning the Yao wine, and Darren Revelle had to go recommending it. Damn. All right, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you and a Yao Ming NFT.
Thank you very, very much. In the Loop is up next. They've got Will Hobson, who wrote the article about in the Washington Post about Tony Busby and the Deshaun Watson saga. You'll want to listen to that at 11:40. They're up next. Seth and I will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.